Thanks for your great work and for bringing to my attention something that I had never thought of before. To me, it was always just kind of, oh, come on. It's wacky. It's weird. It's, you know, it's even stupid. The idea is being stupid. But I never thought that they were all that sinister. I had no idea that there were white supremacy ties to these types of things.
And in his mind, alternate theories have gone from harmless to dangerous. A clear case of why they like to employ the tactic of labeling all this stuff harmful. This is one of the most egregious examples that I've seen. Dr. Andrew White spent his time on the Thinking Atheist channel just blowing smoke right up Seth Andrews' tailpipe. Definitely seems to have fooled him and probably a good number of people in the audience. So I love playing whack-a-mole with this argument, so here we go again. Hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. Now, before I get started, I do want to point out that there are some people who have Atlantis incorporated into a package of beliefs that are pretty messed up. The best worst example of this would be Robert Saphir, at least that I'm aware of. And, yeah, you know, he tries to debunk out of Africa, and he goes about it with some some pretty messed up stuff, man.
Mankind has diverged into distinct races, or as they may be more fitly called, subspecies. Some of these, such as the African and European, are so distinct that, if specimens had been brought to a naturalist without any further information, they would undoubtedly have been considered by him as good and true species. Nevertheless, all the races would probably deserve to rank as man. It must not be supposed that the divergence of each race from the other races, and of all from a common stock, can be traced back to any one pair of progenitors. Charles Darwin, The Descent of Man.
Yes, he also cites scientists as well. We'll get into that in a minute. But the point that I bring this up for is to show that, you know, I'm not inherently opposed to the idea of saying this is a problematic belief and it's incorporating this alternate history stuff, and that's a problem. I'm on board with you there as much as I am on board with somebody misusing science to have some of these same messed up beliefs. They shouldn't be doing that. But those are few and far between, I think, with both science and pseudoscience even. And we'll discuss that in detail as we go forward. But to begin with, let's just go ahead and let these guys lay the groundwork here.
My guest today, Dr. Andrew White, is a research archaeologist for the Illinois State Archaeological Survey. He is an educator, and he also shines the white hot light of scrutiny on pseudo-archaeology.
White hot light of scrutiny or 1970s LED hooked to a dead battery? You say tomato, I say tomato.
All right, let's do definitions. Pseudo-archaeology, what do you mean?
So archaeology is the study of the human past through material remains. Pseudo-archaeology wants to appear to be addressing those same kinds of questions, but they don't actually use any method that I would say is science, but they like to appear as if they're science. So it's not just bad science. It is fake science, and that's where the pseudo comes in.
This is an interesting way for him to frame this as he sets up his case, because, I mean, you're bad science or fake science, sure, but when we're talking about a methodology that he doesn't recognize as scientific, he's going to go back to like 150 years with this stuff, right? We're talking about historical implications. Well, 150 years ago, they didn't do science the same way. Now, the methodology wasn't identical to what it is now. So there's going to be a lot of times where his predecessors would have called this science, and he's going to say, well, that's pseudoscience. And that might seem insignificant, but I assure you, it is not.
Is this purposeful? Like with agency, they are distorting the past?
I think there are a variety of motivations. It's not always intentional. That is definitely part of it. You get people in the pseudo-archaeology business, and oftentimes it is a business, that I would say are grifters and they're cons, and they know what they're saying is wrong. But you also get a lot of people who are genuinely curious, who like the fantasy aspect of it, who want to live in and believe in a world that is maybe different or more exciting than the world that they see in front of them. So they're kind of vulnerable.
You see how bad faith this is? No one could possibly have any reason except for grifting, or their heads are in the clouds. You couldn't look at the stonework on Easter Island and the stonework in Peru and be like, huh, I wonder if these are possibly connected. Or the Moai on Easter Island and the statues of Göbekli Tepe and the way they hold their hands. No possible way you could look at those and be like, I wonder if those are connected. If you're doing that, you're either grifting or your head's in the clouds. See, this is very unfortunate because it actually ignores the true origins of this old Atlantis hunting thing, which is exactly what I just mentioned. The cross-cultural connections of stonework and iconography that are very similar have been very tantalizing to a lot of people for like the last 150, 200 years. But we'll just ignore all that and label it something else.
But I want to talk about this. I guess it was a quiz you gave to a live audience at the University of Southern Indiana. It made me feel really smart because you had a list of questions that you asked the audience that Aristotle had answered in his life.
If I gave you a quiz, which I'm going to do with a few questions on it, we'll see how smart you are and how smart Aristotle is. The earth is at the center of the universe, true or false? False, you are correct. The organ used for thinking is the heart or the brain. Some animals spontaneously generate from the mud. That's false. All things are composed of air, water, earth, and or fire. False. The lungs serve to cool the body. You're a little bit unsure about that one, but you know that it's false. Aristotle would have answered every single one of those wrong. It doesn't mean that you are smarter than him. That means that you benefit from the 500 years of inquiry into the natural world that has been done during the modern era. We know a lot about the world, and it's because of science. It's not because of guessing.
The arguments employed to label pseudoscience white supremacist rhetoric or something equally distasteful frequently involve a little sleight of hand, and Andrew has set us up to discuss that now. Aristotle wasn't just some guy in his day, he was an authority on science. He did not engage in pseudoscience, in fact, he was the standard of what science was at the time, him and his contemporaries. So, if someone today believes the Earth is the center of the universe, well, yeah, you can call that person a pseudoscientist. But in Aristotle's time, the idea that the Earth was the center of the universe was standard. Now, to be clear here, just because Aristotle was a mainstream scientist and he was wrong about some things, that does not mean that I'm saying, well, you know, any old hypothesis that challenges mainstream science is right. Look at what happened to Aristotle. That's not the position I'm taking at all. I'm trying to make sure that we have the terms pseudoscience and science very clearly demarked when we look backwards in time, because they will shift from where we are now. What was yesterday's pseudoscience, or yesterday's science, excuse me, is today's pseudoscience. That's just how that works.
So you and I know things that would have been complete mysteries to the ancient Greeks. And so I like to give this quiz where I basically demonstrate to people that they know more about the natural world than Aristotle. They are almost certainly, well, I can't say for sure, but most people in the audience are probably not smarter than Aristotle, but they benefit from this cumulative production of knowledge that science gives us. That's actual science.
Real science is the way we've advanced? Well, okay, but the definition of real science has shifted in our lifetimes, hasn't it? What was the mainstream, accepted, orthodox opinion of the majority of professionals in paleontology is far different now than what it was when I was first reading about dinosaurs. Göbekli Tepe rewrote how only megalithic complexes could be found and what infrastructure would be required to build such a place. Andrew's statement there gives away a ton. He has disdain for fake science, but as anyone who studies the history of scientific inquiry would be quick to tell you, the origins of real science are in fake science. Alchemy begat chemistry. Astrology begat astronomy. Herbal remedies begat medicine. A failed experiment is still knowledge gained. Furthermore, the real scientists often have to rely on the money of the fake scientists. As any regular viewer of my channel knows, both carbon dating expeditions to the Giza Plateau were financed by people interested in pseudoscience. In one instance, the financier was the Edgar Cayce Foundation, about as far into the pseudoscientific realm as one could be. Yet we gained real knowledge from these expeditions. We know when the pyramids were built, and it happens to be a couple 300 years older than archaeologists accept, but that's a story for a different video.
Now, the downside of that is, with this plethora of knowledge, the wealth of information in the information era, it's also the misinformation, the disinformation era. It's chaos out there. It's the Wild West, right?
It is. I think the internet has a lot to do with that. There's a really interesting period in history in the 1800s, as a lot of new science and technology was coming online, where there was a great and growing interest in the occult and magic. You know, as we were learning about electricity and magnetism, and you know, we were getting better telescopes and able to kind of look outside of the Earth more and look inside the Earth with geology and things like that and trying to understand deep time. So a lot of these observations were incorporated into kind of magical or supernatural explanations of the world. And you get all these secret societies and things like that. But as technology progresses, what we need to attribute to magic and the supernatural keeps getting winnowed away, right? So more and more we can explain things.
That resurgence of mysticism was pretty long-lived. It went from the 18th century on into the early 20th century, an intertwining of spirituality and science. Now, lots of people have a ton of different spiritual beliefs, and they tend to fall well outside the realms of scientific falsifiability. So in my estimation, intertwining the two is not really feasible outside of faith-based beliefs. However, that does not mean these beliefs offer no benefit to science. Mesmerism, otherwise known as animal magnetism, was the subject of the very first clinical single-blind study in scientific history. And the double-blind test was pioneered against homeopathy. Science was used to debunk false claims, and this necessitated innovation, advancing the field of science and debunking the erroneous claim at the same time. By actually using science, the field advanced. We gained new techniques, and we debunked something. But if they would have just made accusations of wrongthink, racism, and the like, well, we wouldn't have gained these new testing methods, nothing would have been debunked, and the only thing that would have been gained is fear in the minds of people that listened and said, oh man, maybe this is really problematic. I never thought it was before.
If you Google the pyramids, the Egyptian pyramids, you will find some good information, and you also find hundreds and hundreds of repetitions of the same kind of set of wrong facts or conclusions.
Now, he is correct in saying there's a lot of bad info out there about the pyramids, but not all of it's coming from pseudoscientists. A great example of that would be the carbon dating of the Great Pyramid. It says it's about 250, 300 years older than the archaeologists say it should be according to their historical timeline. So they ignore the hard data of the carbon dating, or they make excuses for it. It was an old burn. They cooked a bunch of wood at once. And anyway, they have excuses for it so that they don't have to change their timeline, even though the carbon dating doesn't line up. So in my opinion, that's some bad info you'll find out there to begin with, is the dating. Another thing that out there that you'll find that's bad info is I'm trying to tell you it took 20 to 30 years to build the Great Pyramid. That is ludicrous, as anybody who works construction will tell you. You'll find plenty of architects that say, oh yeah, we could totally do this. Then go get the blue-collar dudes that are actually tasked with doing that stuff, and they will laugh at you till they're blue in the face. And it's a perfect example of a little bit of ivory towerism going on here. And any guy with a tool belt will be quick to tell you that the people that don't have tool belts, or that they have nice shiny new tool belts that hang in their closet next to their ties, they don't know the first damn thing about this kind of stuff. And it kind of shows when they say we could do it in 20 or 30 years. Now, the way academia clings to that 20 to 30 years, I've referred to before as a gateway drug to someone becoming a pyramidiot. It will frequently be the first thing that shows someone that the mainstream narrative has some glaring issues.
Now, you know, people will laughingly say, oh, the pyramids were built by aliens. We all know that. Before the ancient aliens was a thing, which really was a post-World War II phenomenon where we started seeing UFOs, and then all of a sudden the ancient past is, you know, filled with aliens. Earlier than that, it was, well, it had to be white people, because there's no way that dark-skinned people could have built these constructions, because white people are the only ones capable of civilization. And so that's the kind of, if you follow the history back and the intellectual ancestry of these ideas, like, that's where you're led time and time again, that a lot of these ideas came about as justifications for colonialism, slavery, imperialism, and a lot of pretty ugly stuff.
Now, I noticed he gave no names here, which is something we will see a lot of in this video, but I've researched this stuff well enough to know he's going to be blaming Ignatius Donnelly, U.S. Congressman from Minnesota in the late 19th century, author of Atlantis, the Antediluvian World. Now, he did say some things along the lines of only white people can innovate. He is the type that would think only white people could have built the pyramids. But he stole his framework and revised it. The men who inspired him, the men he listed as his sources, the men Wikipedia lists as his sources, the men who wrote books along the same lines 20 years prior, believed it was the Maya, not the Aryans, who built the pyramids. They believed the Maya were the Atlanteans, or the inheritors of their knowledge. Charles-Étienne Brizier de Bourbourg and Augustus Le Plongeon were the first people in modern times to claim a lost civilization spread their influence across the globe back in the 1860s. They had no intention of enabling further colonization of the Americas, and in regards to the Aryans, they were of the opinions the Maya came from a superior culture. Now, this is really important because the origins of Atlantis hunting were a very progressive take for its time, extremely progressive take for its time, and it was invented to explain the connections between far-flung cultures. It had nothing to do with enabling the colonization of the Maya or any other people. It literally, one of the things that Étienne de Bourbourg says is, I laugh at the idea that the Aryans were first. These guys were definitely not trying to enable colonization. They were definitely not trying to enable white supremacy. And they were the originators in the modern day. So this is really, really important because Dr. White is not going to address that. That's why he's not maiming anybody. Like I said, he's going to kind of dance around about this. And that's extremely problematic. And it's why I end up making videos on this topic semi-frequently, because this is ridiculous, man. Here's a video here that covers this part of it in pretty decent detail. Link is in the description.
So you're saying that there is a sinister element attached. It's not just bubblegum. Oh, come on. We all know it's, you know, even if people think it's aliens, it's harmless. You're saying that there are actually some layers under the top that need to be addressed.
Now, this is why I have to cover these things. False information comes from an academic, and it seems to be reasonable enough, and the person saying it claims to be an authority on the matter, so it's taken as gospel. It hits both the confirmation bias buttons and the scientific authority button, and it has a profound effect on the human psyche. But the information being spread isn't accurate, nor is it beneficial. It derails scientists from properly investigating these claims. Instead, they rely on accusations of wrongthink to win the discourse. And it alienates the believers in alternate history, something I can attest to firsthand. Many archaeologists that I got along with just fine a few months ago don't like me, and I'm not too terribly fond of them, and that's all because they will not drop this, well, it doesn't matter who started it, it's white supremacist. That crap right there, man, that you don't get to go around and accuse people of spreading white supremacist rhetoric and then not have them get pissed off at you. You alienate people that way. So when scientists employ this as part of their package of public outreach, the people you really want to reach are alienated by this 150%. Don't do it.
And, you know, I wouldn't say that everybody that thinks that everybody that believes the ancient astronaut theory is automatically a racist. Like, that's not what I'm saying. But if you make a diagram of people who believe in Atlantis and ancient aliens and everything else, and then you have another overlapping circle that is white supremacists, the white supremacists almost all know and believe that stuff. Hitler and Himmler, they loved Atlantis and ancient Aryans and things like that. It was central to their philosophy.
And this is the kind of argument that betrays his intentions. What kind of diagram will we get if we ask white supremacists about genetics? How about animal husbandry? You know, while advocating for women's suffrage, Susan B. Anthony said, I will cut off this right arm of mine before I will ever work or demand the ballot for the Negro and not the woman. Now, because she used racism as a talking point to argue for women voting, are we to somehow assume women voting has an insidious past? Suffrage was intended to disenfranchise African Americans? Of course not. This is absurd. But using Andrew's logic, it is. Or take the Tuskegee experiment, where medical doctors engaged in trials where syphilis was tested on unknowing African American men for decades. Does this mean that medicine was created to infect African American men with syphilis? Sadly, people were far more racist in the past, and we have to take that into account when we're evaluating historical beliefs for racist or white supremacist tendencies. But this stuff still does crop up today, like I mentioned. But guys like Robert Saphir, they also use science to inform their beliefs, not just pseudoscience.
A news release by the Australian National University notes, citing new archaeological research, that Homo erectus, an extinct species of primitive humans, went extinct in part because they were lazy. The statement goes on to say, an archaeological excavation of ancient human populations in the Arabian Peninsula during the early Stone Age found that Homo erectus used least effort strategies for tool making and collecting resources.
Now, does this make science inherently racist? Personally, I think it's a better assumption to think that racists love to hijack things, whether it's science, pseudoscience, or Pepe the Frog. For example, look at the images that Robert uses in his little clip right here.
How did the different types or races of man, if you will, appear on the planet?
By hybrid mixes. And that's how all the races came about, through mixings and crossbreeding.
Yeah, because I never bought into the story that someone could walk out of Africa and then over time, the skin tone changes, the facial features, and the structure of the hair changes. I never really bought into that.
Yeah, and that's what we're taught, and that's what textbooks say, but it's false, and we need to understand what the true history is.
Now, these are artistic representations of ancient hominids that were commissioned by museums and sit in museums today, but they're being used to show that the races have to have different origins. They're being used in a way that would be considered white supremacist by most people. Does that mean when these guys were making these things that they were creating racist stuff? Or does that mean it's been hijacked? All right, I belabored that point long enough. Let's move on.
If I were going to embrace an idea that was an explanation for the human past, like I would want to vet that somewhat and know where those ideas are coming from. And I would want to know who my bedfellows were.
I wanted to move on. You know, I dare say that 99.9% of the scientists from the 19th century would be considered flaming bigots by modern standards. So using Andrew's old little metrics there, all the branches of science that were in existence back then have problematic origins. Well, science itself has problematic origins. This is so ridiculous.
So not only can we show factually that these things are wrong, but you can look at where these ideas come from. And if you are operating outside of the scientific framework, there's no way to test those ideas. And so it actually does matter where they come from. And the stuff about Atlantis really kicks off in the late 1800s. And it's racist to its core. And I'm not talking about, you know, the Disney Atlantis with the Little Mermaid and stuff like that. Like, I'm talking about this idea that there was a sunken continent that was the mother civilization for all other civilizations around the world. And that continent had to have been populated by Aryans because they are the ones who are capable of civilization and that would trickle down to the rest of the world. So they were responsible for the civilizations in Central America, you know, rather than the Maya or the Aztec. They're responsible for the Inca civilization rather than the Incans. They're responsible for ancient Sumer. They're responsible for Egypt. And they're responsible for stuff in Europe and any place else where people were able to stack stones that had to be white folks. That's the idea. And that idea gained popularity along with this continued need to disenfranchise people that were being subjugated by colonial powers.
Andy's ignoring the two men I mentioned earlier, Charles Étienne Brasier de Bourbourg and Augustus Le Plongeon. And as I mentioned, these were the men who kicked off Atlantis hunting in the modern day, and they were the first to posit a connection between South America and Egypt. And they both believed it was the Maya, not the Aryans, who were the civilizers after the Great Flood, the builders of the great stone monuments around the world. Andrew is ignoring these influential pioneers in order to make a case that Atlantis hunting is inherently white supremacist. Notice how he words it.
I'm talking about this idea that there was a sunken continent that was the mother civilization for all other civilizations around the world, and that continent had to have been populated by Aryans.
Now, this is a myth started by Jason Colavito and John Hoops. They pretend the origins of this stuff is all white supremacy, but they have culled the data so that they can hold this position. Taking the observations and wonder of the two earliest explorers in Maya country who were sympathetic and even empathetic to the Maya, and allowing their work to be remembered only through the lens of later people who adopted it and twisted it to their own ends. Coming from academics, this lie tends to go unchecked. In their hangout with venerable archaeoastronomer E.C. Krupp, the astrophysicists at Bad Astra spread the same disinformation, and they got it from Flint Dibble.
Recently on this channel, we did a deep dive into a new Netflix series called Ancient Apocalypse, which is all about how Atlantis is real because no societies of color could have developed substantial architecture or astronomy. If you look back to the roots of this crazy Atlantis conspiracy theory, you see that it started in white supremacist, specifically Nazi circles, and this presentation on Netflix, which is a very mainstream platform, or the History Channel a decade ago, which was a very mainstream platform, is spreading these white supremacist ideas in, like, to the general public and watering them down. But there is still that undercurrent of, well, there's no way that a non-white society could have done all of this.
This shows the problem here. This is a pervasive myth in academia being spread by people with letters next to their names, and the trust in other academics being honest has allowed this to run rampant. Like here, Andrew makes some claims and says, wow, I never thought of it like that before. But no skepticism, no scrutiny, none of that gets applied. So some rather insidious lies have crept their way into the discourse, usually being shared by people who don't even know that they're spreading a falsehood. But the creators, the people who perpetuate these things the most, they certainly know it's false. Colavito has written about these Maya First people himself, and he knows that they were there long before white supremacists got a hold of it. Hoops and Dibble have been informed by yours truly, and they don't care. So I am pretty sure that Astra doesn't know she was misspeaking when she spoke to E.C. Krupp, and I don't think that Andrew was knowingly lying here. But he was spreading a falsehood, consciously or not. And it's not a benign falsehood he's spreading. Now, in the past, I have called this a tenured game of telephone because it starts off with an almost true statement that gets warped into complete insanity, and it's done through academics.
Okay, so people have known about the pyramids for a long time. Like, they've always been exposed, so Europeans knew about them. But Egyptology really starts when Napoleon invades France around 1800 or so. People start studying Egypt. They find depictions of all kinds of different races and ethnicities in ancient Egypt, people with light skin, with dark skin, with very dark skin. The racists in the world cannot justify white supremacy and have a civilization that is as grand as ancient Egypt was not have been built by white people. So they look at those pictures and they say, obviously, these are the builders and the rest of these people are the slaves or whatever. It's always seen through kind of a lens of, in your hierarchy of societies, you have to put the ones built by white Europeans on top. And this is part of the whole colonial enterprise that was ongoing from the 1500s to the 1900s, say. That idea gets expanded as people discover other ancient civilizations around the world, like those in India, ancient India, in the Indus Valley, and in Central America, South America, and even in North America. So eventually there needs to be an explanation in their view for how white people are responsible for all the rest of those also. And that's where Atlantis comes in as a geographical area where there would have been a white civilization and it's now submerged, which is very convenient because we can't go do any, you know, poking around and looking there because it's beneath the Atlantic Ocean. And it's that same package of ideas. All you have to do is replace Atlantis and ancient Aryans with aliens, and you've got the ancient astronaut theory. It's all the same. You know, the local people could not have built this. There's all of these things that don't fit. There's white gods and, you know, stuff that can only be seen from the air. So there's a layer added onto it, but it's essentially the Atlantis is responsible for civilization throughout the world trope, just with a tie to outer space.
This is all bullshit here. I don't even know how else to put it. The biblical races, the descendants of Noah's sons, the three races of the Semites, Japhethites, and Hamites, this had colored the view of races for centuries by the time Napoleon showed up in Egypt. According to the Bible, after Noah's flood, Noah got drunk and passed out naked. His son Ham saw this and laughed, but his brothers Japheth and Sam both covered their father. So when Noah awoke, he cursed Ham to have his descendants be the slaves of the other two brothers' descendants. And for the longest time, the old world belief was the Semitic people were from the Middle East, the sons of Japheth lived in Europe, and the sons of Ham lived in Africa. Now this was challenged by the many discoveries that Napoleon's army brought back from Europe with them. The knowledge that this African nation had thrived eons ago undermined the validity of the curse of Ham. So people began to see that that was potentially inaccurate. The popularization of the pyramids diminished the assertions of white supremacy. It did not make them stronger. This is a pretty well-known fact. I'll include a link or two below discussing it in more detail. As I've already mentioned, the men who started this idea of the connection between Egypt and South America, and of India, I might add, were both of the opinion the Maya were the civilizers after the Great Flood of Noah. Le Plagnon actually believed the Maya had conquered the Indus Valley and beyond. These men were instrumental not only in the creation of the modern version of Atlantis hunting, but they also made many of the discoveries that we still look at today when discussing South America. Le Plagnon discovered the Chacmool statue, and de Bourbourg translated the Popol Vuh into French, which allowed it to easily be passed around the Western world. They didn't decide to formulate some connection to dethrone indigenous people or to steal their credit. They made observations that led them to beliefs that we still today consider to be unorthodox. And yes, some people have and did hijack their claims. But that doesn't mean that their claims that their ideas originated there. As a matter of fact, when Dr. West basically eliminates these two people from being part of the creation of this whole Atlantis hunting stuff in the modern day, he's doing a huge disservice to two archaeologists. That's right, both of these men were archaeologists. So back to the whole, well, pseudoscience is blah, blah, blah. No, these men were scientists, okay? And they're the ones that cooked up the modern version of Atlantis hunting was created by archaeologists, not by congressmen to displace Native Americans. It was created by archaeologists to explain what they saw. Wrap your head around that one.
Dr. White, do you sit down and watch the History Channel? I mean, are you there? Are you binging and sponging and then making notes on the History Channel?
You know, when I first started doing this about 10 years ago, actively, I watched more of those programs, but it tends to be the same thing over and over again. And I've got two kids and a real job.
So he doesn't even bother to differentiate between the different claims there, you know, the electric universe and the flat earth and the idea that there was a civilization that existed 12,000 years ago that we don't know about. These are all the same. You know, it's the same stuff. This explains why he's leaning so hard on the racism angle. That's one big hammer he can just use to hit everything. He's got one tool in his toolbox, and this is the one that he uses. Why would I have to research anything? I don't need to research anything. I'll just hit it with the racism hammer.
An interesting thing about the Nazi connection to me is that, like, if you look at Ancient Aliens, they swallow hook, line, and sinker, not only that Hitler and the Nazis were interested in the occult, but that they actually had these supernatural powers from the aliens. So it's kind of like they're buying into the propaganda a little bit in a way that I think is kind of shocking and horrifying.
Now, you want to see double standards? I'll show you some double standards. If one accepts the crazy idea that the Nazis were influenced by aliens and that's where they got things like rockets and jets from, one is elevating the Nazis and saying that they're better than we thought they would. You're not taking it away from them and saying there's no way the Nazis could have invented jets or rockets on their own, like you would be if you said that the pyramids were made by somebody besides Egyptians. Then you are definitely stealing credit from the Egyptians. But when it says for the Nazis, well, that just elevates them. You see how this is done? This is just the same standard. He does it's standards, schmanders. He just does whatever the hell he wants.
Hitler was into that stuff. He was looking for relics. They were looking for sources of power. But again, you know, I'm not an expert on all of the ins and outs, so it's harder for me to, I think, authoritatively separate fact from fiction and what these secret societies really were and what they really believed.
What the hell do you mean you don't know the ins and outs of this stuff, Andy? You claim to do the research in this stuff like it's some big thing that you're into, but you don't know the origins and you don't know the ins and outs of any of the more esoteric. There's the stuff that would be hard to research. So what exactly do you look into? Claims of racism, huh? This seems to be more of this lazy debunking. Instead of just looking into the claims, he just states a belief and rolls with it. Yes, Hitler was into weird spiritual artifacts and all kinds of alternate history stuff. But that's not what Mein Kampf's about, is it? Nope, this is all window dressing. Despite the claims that we will hear, is an incidental belief. One that occurred long after Hitler had came to the conclusion that he blamed other races for everything. Just like today, we don't see Atlantis being a thing that people discuss and then they go become a racist. Instead, it's something that a racist will bring up as one more reason that they think white people are really, really cool. Now, this is really disappointing coming from an academic. You could do proper research, but instead you just invoke Hitler. Godwin's law is freaking like 30 years old at this point, man. Come on.
You say, and correct me if I got it wrong, throughout history, most of, if not all of, the world's worst atrocities have been imbued with these types of conspiracy theories, aliens, the occult, etc. Did I hear that right?
I would say that pseudoscience and human atrocities walk hand in hand. And we have multiple examples of that. So I wouldn't say that everything that goes wrong in the world is related, you know, to these specific kind of particular examples. But like, if you look at, you know, the justifications for slavery, a lot of those came from incorrect answers to how do we explain human variability? What does human variability mean? Why do some people have dark skin and different hair than others? And what kind of significance do we attach to that? And if you take a pseudoscientific approach to it, you can come up with any answer that you want to. And the answer that they came up with was that these are lesser people. These are subhumans. There were multiple creations. God did not just create, you know, Adam and Eve and we're all related. Like there was something else that happened, and that's polygenism. And that was absolutely fundamental to the justification of slavery, at least in North America, which is the example that I know because that's where I'm from.
Polygenism was endorsed by scientists. That quote that I included at the beginning of this video that came from Robert Safir's video, that was Charles Darwin saying different races had different origins, and he was no pseudoscientist. Now, I pointed this out earlier on, but he keeps doing it, so here we are. You can't say, oh, those were the sins of pseudoscience, when it was mainstream, real scientists doing the things you're labeling pseudoscience in hindsight. You can rightly say Safir is clinging to these ideas in the modern day, and that is pseudoscience. It is not endorsed by the majority of scientists in the pertinent fields at all. But you can't accuse somebody in 1880 of endorsing pseudoscience if they believed in Charles Darwin. The sins of polygenism's historical usage are the sins of mainstream science, not the sins of pseudoscience.
If you look at things like the Holocaust and the Nazis in general, pseudoscience is everywhere in that. And it's all about, you know, constructing a narrative of the human past that articulates with, resonates with, and justifies your agenda, whatever that is. And it worked for slavery. It worked for the Holocaust. It worked for the removal of Native Americans, the Native American genocide that went on in this country in the early 1800s, where most Native American peoples from Eastern North America were dispossessed and forcibly moved westward to make room for the growing United States.
Hitler created a bunch of scapegoats that he blamed for the downfall of Germany, and he hated them. Not because he believed in Atlantis, because he believed they destroyed his country. Slavery was a thing in the U.S. that was held for financial reasons. Now, it obviously relied on slaveholders and their supporters having a messed up view of other races, but it was a financially motivated thing. Manifest Destiny and the displacement of indigenous Americans was about land seizing, not about other beliefs, not about Atlantis. Now, there's no question that alternate beliefs were at times attached to these actions and used to justify some pretty heinous things. That shouldn't be forgotten or ignored. But it also shouldn't be conflated with it meaning that the origins of all of this stuff were rooted in white supremacy, nor should it be used to just say, well, all of these kinds of ideas are inherently problematic because some assholes used them for problematic things. I especially expect scientists to use a little bit more nuance than that.
You know, the pre-contact Native American societies, which is what I study and have been for 30 years, created an incredible landscape filled with sophisticated architecture, earthen architecture, all over Eastern North America. They're earthen mounds. So as European settlers moved in and cleared forests and farmed and started finding these mounds, it became a problem because if you have very sophisticated structures, those are signs of civilization. So who were the people that built these mounds? Well, they couldn't have possibly been the Native Americans, because if they were, then that would make them a civilized people and we have no business pushing them out. So this thing called the Mound Builder myth emerged, where there was a separate earlier civilization that was before the Native Americans that built all these mounds. And therefore, the Native Americans have no more claim to this land than the white Europeans do, and it's okay for us just to push them out because they are unrelated to the civilization that was there before.
The mound builder mythology was supported by the archaeologists of the day for the most part. It was not a fringe belief. It was extremely, extremely mainstream. Furthermore, the origins of it are unknown. They're assumed to be created to displace the Native Americans, but the origins are unknown. Archaeologist Brad Lepper says, historians largely have assumed the myth was created by European Americans more or less out of whole cloth as a just-so story to account for the presence of amazing ancient earthworks, but also to cast the indigenous American Indians in the role of relatively recent intruders whose tenuous title to the land was based merely on conquest. Under these circumstances, the Europeans need not have felt any compunction about sweeping aside the supposed savage hordes to reclaim the land on behalf of civilization. In my Columbus Dispatch column, I present the argument that this myth actually owes much of its substance to the American Indian oral traditions recorded by early European pioneers. This does not, of course, lend credence to the story or make its use as a justification for the usurpation of American Indian lands any less heinous, but it makes the history of the myth much more complicated and interesting. So the claim that Dr. White makes there as fact is merely an assertion.
It's all data points, or I would say fake data points, that people use to separate Native Americans from their history so that they are a savage people and not a civilized people. And I'm using the Victorian era terms for that. I wouldn't actually use those terms in order to dispossess them and push them out. And that was one of the two great, you know, original sins of this country, that and slavery. And both of those had to do with an intentionally incorrect or blind interpretation of the human past that did not articulate at all with facts and evidence or any kind of genuine desire to understand.
This is a very nuanced topic. Like the archaeologist I quoted a minute ago said, it's complicated and interesting. But Andy wants to boil it all down to racism, and that's that. He claims the people knew better and that they lied. Now, I don't disagree that the Native Americans were cheated. I mean, they were treated horribly, right? And they quite probably, there were archaeologists lying to help forge a narrative. But make no mistakes, the stamp of approval came from archaeologists, and there was no shortage of archaeologists on hand to tell the public the indigenous Americans were not the people who had claim to the land. Once again, we see Dr. White trying to attribute the sins of real scientists to pseudoscience, and by extension, alternate researchers who look all over the place to get their information, he's saying they all get it from guys like this. And bringing slavery up and claiming that it has to do with alternate history, I just no. People bought people, and it was gross. Don't diminish this cruelty by engaging in tacit apologism for their behavior. Oh, they thought it was okay because they believed it was just another species, not real people. Oh, they thought it was okay because they believed their parents were the first here. Now, do you see how if you use just a little bad faith, it's easy to twist this around to where you're the racist, using your own standards?
So to make sure I'm understanding, are you saying that the History Channel's broadcasts of shows like Ancient Aliens isn't just bubblegum entertainment, even if they're sincere and they sincerely got it wrong? This becomes a moral affront because they are essentially selling stuff that's laced with atrocity, division, bigotry, racism, etc.
And this is why I address this stuff. If left to run amok, guys like Dr. White will forge a narrative that excludes all alternate hypotheses, as they are all related to racism. By conflating the problematic with the mundane, Andy has convinced Seth, at the very least, that if someone's arguing against the scientific interpretation on the same piece of evidence, it's probably a tradition of racism that they're invoking. Unlike the archaeologists, who still work at universities that get in trouble for having the bones of indigenous Americans illegally stored in them and things like that. And you heard me right. People like Dr. White, who are employed by, in his case, the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, their universities tend to have a very long tradition of grabbing Native American artifacts, illegally housing Native American artifacts and bones and things like that, and then consistently have to reevaluate their stuff because today they're trying to do better, but their predecessors in the same building didn't. 150 years ago, their tradition, their origins of that school, now you want to talk some freaking racist traditions, racist history. I've said this 1,000 times. Let me make it very clear. I am not saying that because 150 years ago that these colleges were doing some horrible shit, that they're full of horrible people today. What I'm saying is when guys like Andy here start throwing stones, they're throwing them inside of a glass house. You do not want to bring this kind of shit up, dude. Your basement is full of literal skeletons. Maybe you should just stick to the evidence and quit bringing up the social issues, because you guys are a long way from unringing all of the bells that you rang that were really bad 150 years ago, even 80 years ago.
And the fact that these ideas have these submerged kind of white supremacist us versus them themes that have been running through them for hundreds of years means they are not harmless. And it doesn't take very much scratching to find out that even if everybody who believes in Atlantis is not a white supremacist, that most white supremacists believe in Atlantis.
These ideas do not have a history of hundreds of years of us versus them white supremacy. That is a falsehood. He seems to make a lot of assertions, like I said, without really using any names or anything to prove his point or citing any works. Just, nah, I say this is racist. You know, this is all connected to racism. And as I've already shown, the first influential people to write about Atlantis in the modern day, they were not white supremacists. And then he says, even if all the believers in Atlantis aren't the white supremacists, almost all your white supremacists are believers in Atlantis. And that's just hilarious, because like I said, racists love to steal crap and twist it. You know what else they love? They love statistics. They love to talk about crime statistics and twist that shit all up to make it say exactly what they want it to say. They also like genetics. They also like to twist that shit up, like I was showing you a little bit ago with Robert Saphir. They like to twist that shit up and make it say whatever they want it to say. So I guess we could say that not everybody that loves science and statistics is a racist, but almost all your racists love science and statistics.
Doesn't matter whether the talking heads on Ancient Aliens even know or understand where these ideas come from, but they are feeding it and pandering in a lot of ways to this base that does understand the implications.
So Andy cherry picks the early talking heads when it comes to Atlantis, ignoring the actual modern origins in favor of the people he can call white supremacists, and then he uses that to make a case for the modern guys who espouse any of these lost civilization stuff when all they're pandering to white supremacists. This is disgusting. I don't even know what other label would be as descriptive of this garbage. I'll demonstrate exactly what I mean. Sir Flinders Petrie was a raging eugenicist, but he was also the father of Egyptology. His works are consistently cited, even in modern papers. So, whenever somebody cites a paper by Sir Flinders Petrie, or even when they say the Egyptians built the pyramids, like Sir Flinders Petrie believed, they are invoking eugenics. Much science. Brilliant, brilliant argumentation.
You know, cultures share information between them. Ideas, technologies, that's called diffusion, right? An idea can go from one culture to another by any number of means. If you put the white supremacist spin on it, and this is historical, they would call it hyperdiffusionism. And then the assumption is that technologies and ideas always flow in one direction, from the superior to the inferior. So they come from civilized people down to the savages, or they come from the aliens down to us.
More falsehoods. The term hyperdiffusionism was most likely coined in the 1960s by an archaeologist named Glenn Daniel. And the idea that one culture spread its influence around the world to all the others, again, this was started by Charles Etienne Brizier de Bourbourg and Augustus Le Poignon, both of who believed the Maya were this more advanced people, not white people. So his entire premise here, it's complete and utter bullshit. He doesn't even know what he's talking about. He doesn't know the origins of the term. He misrepresents that. He doesn't even name drop anybody. He just tells you, yeah, it's racist. Trust me, bro. This is bullshit. It's lazy. Now, what would the definition of pseudo-history be? According to Wikipedia, pseudo-history is a form of pseudo-scholarship that attempts to distort or misrepresent the historical record, often by employing methods resembling those used in scholarly historical research. It seems clear to me this is exactly what Dr. White is doing. He's rewritten the past in a manner that allows him to use pseudoscience and science interchangeably when discussing previous things so that he can always blame it on pseudoscience. He says that the term hyperdiffusionism was created by white supremacists, and this is historical, and that's not the truth at all. And the concept wasn't created by a white supremacist, and he ignores the two people that were the foundational people in the modern day of the idea so that he can claim that it's all rooted in white supremacy, that it was created to be colonial. This is a bullshit argument made from lies and laziness. And the way that Dr. White presents this is pretty disingenuous because without any evidence, he's basically forcing people to lean on their biases to make their opinion. Do you believe that it's racist, probably, or do you believe that it's not racist, probably? Because you got no evidence to decide, just trust him, bro, or don't. Which is pretty freaking lazy and kind of messed up. You know, he's like he didn't count on anybody that knew any of this stuff actually weighing in, but I've been researching this a lot lately, and I kind of care if my beliefs, you know, are inherently racist or not, and lo and behold, hyperdiffusionism is not. But why does he make this lazy bullshit stuff? What is the point of this? You know, I've said this so many times, that archaeologists treat Graham Hancock as a content farm, as just a place they can go and just be like, and just, they don't have to do any research. They just like talk some shit and then, oh yeah, get all a bunch of clicks. People click on those videos and they get a bunch of attaboys from their friends because they're talking shit about Graham Hancock or Ancient Aliens or whatever. And this is another perfect example of this. And I'll show you exactly what I mean. He is just trying to gain social media clout here. This has nothing to do with actually debunking any claims, and I'll prove it. Well, what sources would you say? Say somebody really wanted to debunk Graham Hancock or Ancient Aliens. What people would you send them to? Jason Colavito, David Miano, John Hoops, Flint Dibble. Some of the people I don't like very much, but these are the places you would send them, right? These are the sources, like Mark Boslow. These are the people that you would send them to, right? Well, let's see where Andy thinks we should go if we need more information.
Where would they find resources like this? I know people in my audience are interested in tooling up for these conversations. Where would you send them?
So, I mean, I have my own YouTube channel. I'm pretty easy to find. Right now, the name of it is Nobody Listens to Andrew, which is named after a book that I had as a kid because I was the younger sibling and I always felt like nobody listened to me at all. And as a Generation Xer, like, I don't like to be branded as one certain thing. So I talk about a bunch of different stuff on my YouTube channel, but a lot of it is related to pseudoarchaeology and pseudoscience. There's a group on Facebook now, Fraudulent Archaeology Wall of Shame. It has 133. That's right. Oh, yeah. I started that group, I don't know how many, maybe 10 years ago.
And there it is. Do you want some resources to fight pseudoscience? Go to his meme page on Facebook. Or if you want that in a video format, go check out his YouTube where you can find such gems as Furiosa 2 Woke or Malcolm Young and Angus Young before AC/DC. What a transparent joke. You guys have a good day.